Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency.
Bit of a sensitive one. I have an employee whose English really isn't up to scratch. It's starting to cause issues with customers and making it difficult to manage their performance because they're struggling to understand where they're going wrong. Is dismissal a possibility in this situation, or would that be off the table? Appreciate your advice.
You know, there's so many different ways that language can be responsible for things going wrong in the workplace. And it's something I deal with every day, is when HR will send me a draft email that a manager's written to say, can you just look this over before it goes out? And I'm like, passive aggressive. If you have got someone who has managed to get through your recruitment process and you haven't spotted that their English isn't up to scratch, you probably don't have enough human-to-human touch points in that process.
Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to HRER. We are back in the red seats. My name is Ollie Robinson, and yours is...
I'm Melissa Thursfield.
We've got another hot topic to discuss today, and we've started to implement, like, cool titles now, eh?
We've done so many, we think, you know what, we don't need numbers anymore.
No, episode 33, we're going to use, like, real good, not ChatGPT-generated
No, we
titles.
Definitely didn't do that. So go on, Ollie, what is the title of the podcast today?
Tongue-tied, when HR speaks one language.
Okay, which, as you might be able to guess, relates to spoken English in the workplace.
It does, yes, fluency and all sorts, and the impact of that on your job. So, it's quite a short email. Hi, Alyssa. Bit of a sensitive one. I have an employee whose English really isn't up to scratch. It's starting to cause issues with customers and making it difficult to manage their performance because they're struggling to understand where they're going wrong. Is dismissal a possibility in this situation, or would that be off the table? Appreciate your advice.
Okay, so as you said, really kind of straightforward email. We haven't got one of the long-winded, and this happened, then this happened, then this happened. This was a situation where we had an employer that was running a call center type business. Mm-hmm. So the employee was employed to be on the phones day in, day out, pretty much all day, mm-hmm. interacting with members of the public within the UK. So not an outsourced call center in the UK for a foreign country. So there was a heavy reliance on the ability to be able to communicate clearly, effectively, efficiently, and very well, mm-hmm. which this employee was unable to do. So that's kind of the backdrop. So it's not a situation where we've got someone who perhaps is in a very tech-heavy role, where there isn't much customer interaction or perhaps much need for interaction across the team. It was very much in a customer-facing situation. So that's the sort of environment that we're going to discuss this in. Maybe we can discuss situations where perhaps language isn't so important. Mm-hmm. But in this situation, you know, it's very much a role where language was a requirement.
Yeah, I mean, the job that comes to mind immediately is like, especially in our sort of field, is like developers. Mm-hmm. They don't have a lot to do with sort of, they have a little bit to do with customers, but not as much as like...
No, and I don't understand a word they say anyway. I mean, I know they're speaking English.
Yeah, it's all...
But it's in
numbers and such, isn't it?
Yeah. I think there's probably every other day I'm having to Google something that I've either read, come across, or seen in the tech development world. Which, what was the one I saw the other day? Swim lanes. Do you need a swim lane for this?
I don't know what that means.
And I was like, I don't know what a swim lane is. It's where you've got processes that work in parallel.
Okay,
so you can map them out in swim lanes.
I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. When you I remember the first time I heard sandbox. Do you want a sandbox for this?
I know what that means.
Do you want a what? A what?
A what?
A what? Pardon? A sandbox? So yeah, sandbox and swim lanes.
Just somewhere to play.
Yeah, exactly. Play. Yeah, that's which always... I love that. But yeah, so in that sense, speaking English, totally over my head. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's where I'd say, yeah, probably in development roles, it doesn't actually matter what language it is that you're speaking, because developers all seem to talk the same nonsense anyway.
I think they do it on purpose sometimes.
Do you reckon?
Hey-ho. So we'll start off with a statistic. Mm-hmm. Almost 1 million people in Britain cannot speak English. Are you surprised by that?
I think I am and I'm not. We're a very multicultural society.
We are, yeah.
In the same vein, you know, education in this country generally is provided in English. Mm-hmm. I think there are possibly private or community-led educations where that isn't the case. But yeah, I think I'm surprised it's a million. That's a lot of people who aren't speaking the language. Let's face it, you know, if you go to Wales, signs mm-hmm. are bilingual. You don't necessarily have to be able to speak Welsh. There's mm-hmm. people who are very proud Welsh speakers, very proud of their nationality, who want people to speak Welsh. But there is the ability to move through life in Wales without speaking Welsh. Everything is bilingual. Yes, yes. The same in parts of Scotland, in Ireland, even parts of Europe. You know, China, Japan, often you see the bilingual signposts, bus stops, public transport. You can mm-hmm. make your way around somewhere not speaking the native language. In England, that's not the case.
We're pretty selfish, aren't we?
Well, I suppose we're, you know, we are in England, so I suppose, whether it's seen as selfish. But I'd say it's a more difficult country to live in if you don't speak the language, because we're not that accommodating in terms of things like public services, education, healthcare, in terms of, you know, having things in other languages. Stuff, yeah. And also, I think bilingual stuff here, not as common. I think you come across a lot of French, Italian, Spanish, who can often speak two or three languages relatively well.
Yes.
I'd say in the UK, we get to like GCSE age and everyone goes, oh, thank goodness I don't have to do that anymore.
Do for that. That's basic,
and then by the time you're 19, you know how to say like bonjour and où est la toilette, and that's kind of it. And everyone's like, well, that's it. I can, you know, I know how to say hello and where's the loo and I don't need anymore. So I don't think we're a very language-led culture either.
No. We are. I make jokes about it, but like we are the only language.
We are the only language in the world.
We are in the world. Yeah. Well, not, but my argument would be that like you can put English as a second. Do you know what I mean?
Are we the most spoken language in the world?
Mandarin, I think, because of pure volume in China. But I think like the most second spoken language must be English.
Yeah.
Must be.
I mean, I like to make an effort. My French is okay. I mean, I was taking the mic a bit then with, please don't let anyone judge me for how I said la toilette then.
But you can do it.
My French is all right.
Yeah.
My German's a bit scrappy. My Welsh is okay. And then I did take Japanese night classes at university. So I do like my languages.
Mm-hmm. It is hard to learn though as you get older, so I've read. Like between the ages of 0 and 8 years old, I think it was.
Oh, you're a sponge.
Yeah, your brain's like real malleable for language. And if you've picked up a language before, like my Polish mate.
Yeah.
He, like, someone will say a Romanian word around him and he's like, oh, that means that.
Yeah.
But I think
there's a window when you're younger, but then I think when you're older, I think if you can cross the hurdle of one or two languages, they start to come easier.
It's a skill,
then it's
your
brain's retraining, isn't it?
Absolutely.
But yeah, generally as a society, we're not that great when it comes to other languages. And I think of tolerance of other languages. There's those, you know, real stereotype where you have a Brit abroad who's shouting at some poor local.
Uno biro, please.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just gets the whole eye roll and people go, oh God, the Brits.
It's that
sort of attitude, I think. But yeah, so no, a million, surprise, not, but maybe not.
No, I think it's a big figure, but I don't know, who are we to say? Well, we'll jump into the employer questions. At what point does a language barrier become a performance concern? What are some of the issues that can come with it?
So in this situation, it was a performance concern because the individual couldn't understand what was being said to them on the phone.
Mm.
So they were dealing with customer inquiries, had the script that is given to help people with their calls. So if this person asks this, then this is how we expect you to answer. Doesn't have to be word for word, but it's there as a guide. And what they realized from the call recordings was that she was guessing which question she thought she'd been asked and then reading the answer regardless of whether or not it made any sense because she hadn't actually understood the question. So was trying really hard, had understood kind of the assignment to some extent because she was like, well, here's my script.
Mm-hmm.
But her English was so poor that she couldn't actually understand the question that was being put to her. In terms of then her pronunciation, again, very much struggled with that. It was very, very basic in terms of how she was able to respond. So she was struggling with getting some of the words out. So it led to a huge amount of frustration for customers. It led to customer complaints. And there were financial services driven business as well. So, you know, when you're talking to people about money, it's not really something where you can afford for things to get lost in translation.
High stress in it, yeah.
Yeah, precisely. So at that point where you've got someone who's in a role that they are unable to effectively do, that's when it would become a performance concern.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't need to be as extreme as this example, and it's something that we might perhaps come on to in terms of some of the other questions, but how this person ended up in this role, you know, the recruitment
job
situation here,
yeah.
Particularly when we're talking in an environment where we know the employment rights bill's coming, we know day one rights are coming, everyone's saying, you know, the way that we combat this, the way that we get around it is through proper recruitment and onboarding. We can't afford for stuff like this to happen.
No.
When we get to those day one rights.
Big issue to slip through the gap.
So, yeah, there's a question there around how this was allowed to happen. But I'd say situations for HR professionals and managers, what you're probably going to come across more likely is not a situation where you've got someone where there's such a language barrier, but actually where they can speak, read and write English, mm-hmm. but the standard's just not there. So it might be that emails are littered with grammatical errors, or they perhaps don't understand innuendo or nuances in language. And this is one that drives my husband up the wall. So he's a native Welsh speaker, Welsh first language. He learned English. But if I say to him, oh, it's raining cats and dogs, he's like, what are you talking about?
Be literal.
Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He doesn't get it. Or if I say, you know, you're driving me up the wall, he's like, what?
That's physically impossible.
Yeah, exactly. It's that sort of, you know, or, you know, oh, you're bright as a button today. He's like, will you just stop? Speak English, for God's sake. Yeah. So I think sometimes where you have got those language or cultural barriers, things like that can be a bit of an issue in casual conversation. Mm-hmm. But I think where it becomes a bit murkier and a bit hard to decide where the line on capability is where you don't have those extreme examples of where someone clearly does have a grasp of the language, but actually it's causing some bumps in the road rather than a situation like this where it just becomes impossible.
You're referring to like metaphors there though. Mm. Like metaphors and similes and stuff and like sarcasm.
Yeah.
Like hard to pick up on if you're not English. Like you speak to, even speaks like American people. Mm.
And I think really sarcasm is actually a really good example because people can take that totally the wrong way. Mm. And it's stuff that we've talked about with the sexual harassment things when we talk about banter as well, is how people say things, the way that they say it, the intonation in their voice. I'm a very sarcastic person, so I can come across sometimes as a bit of a blunt instrument. And if you're not, I think if you're not someone who absorbs sarcasm very well,
you can take offence quite easily.
Take offence, right? Yeah, come across a bit rude.
It comes into like facial cues, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Like, especially with sarcasm. It can be considered quite mean sometimes, but the things you say, do you know what I mean? If they're quite blunt, like you mentioned there. But if, like, you like just drop a little grin or something afterwards, or like chuckle.
Yeah. Just see, I'm deadpan. So
take it or leave it. Like, that's how it is.
Yeah. But I think also things like passive aggressive, you know, there's so many different ways that language can be responsible for things going wrong in the workplace. Mm. And it's something I deal with every day, is when HR will send me a draft email that a manager's written to say, can you just look this over before it goes out? And I'm like, passive aggressive. No, we'll take that out, red pen that. No, you can't say that. Because of the way it comes across. Mm. And that there's obviously a frustration bubbling under the surface with an issue that they're trying to deal with. And it's coming out in the language that they're using.
Do you think, though, that you're more primed to pick up on that because you partake in such things?
Yeah, I'm objective as well. Well, yes. One, because I can be sarcastic and deadpan, but two, because I'm objective. I'm not in that lived experience. Mm. And I think then when you're kind of in it, you read it and you think, well, this is reasonable. But then for someone who's an outsider, thinking, oh, no, that's not going to be received in the right way.
Yeah, if they sent the same email to, like, I don't know, Julie, who's like late 50s, been doing your job for like double the time, she might read it a little bit different. Eh?
Yeah.
I digress. Let's move through these employer questions. Can poor English skills be a fair reason for dismissal, or is it against the law?
So poor English can be a reason for dismissal. So it could come under a capability point of view. So if we're saying, for example, someone's use of language is inappropriate, or perhaps they don't have the vocabulary range, or actually their written English is dreadful. So where you've got someone who's very email-based, if you've got emails that are littered with grammatical errors and typos that they're not spotting, and if you're interacting with customers and members of the public, that is the face of your business, is the communication that people are receiving. Mm-hmm. So yes, casual communication has become a lot more prevalent. It's more acceptable to receive an email that says like, hi, Ollie, you know, hope you're okay, da-da-da-da-da, thanks very much, rather than, dear Oliver, kind I hope regards. My email finds you well. Ugh. And then signs off with kind regards.
I don't like it.
The whole portion of the internet that's devoted to kind regards, best regards when you're really peed off with somebody. Is that totally over?
I know what you mean. I know, like, you break it down, like, the regards is ultimate.
Regards is basically like an F you.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's like, this is my final email on the subject.
I'm being implied.
I'm being really passive aggressive and I know it. Regards
no
at the
kind,
end.
No nothing.
So, I think where you've got someone who can't communicate effectively or it makes your brand look bad, that I would say would be a capability point.
Okay.
I think where you've got someone where their English is so terrible that they simply cannot communicate, and I'd probably look to draw the line to think, with capability, and we've talked about capability processes in detail in the past on the pods, is this something we can coach someone through? Is this something that we can put someone on a performance improvement plan and say, right, within the next 2 or 3 weeks, I expect your English to have improved this much. This is the support and help we're going to give you. If it's something that we think we could reasonably improve through a process, then it's probably a capability issue in the traditional sense.
Okay.
And they're either going to pass or fail that capability plan. And if they fail it, they will be dismissed on a capability point. If their English is so dreadful that this person can't understand the capability process,
we're done here, effectively.
We're kind of done. We're back in that. Your favourite.
Go on.
It's a saucer.
A sausage, yes.
I can't believe I said that first. It's an SOSR. Because we're in an impossible situation.
Yeah.
We can't implement a company process because the person can't understand it. Not because they're stupid, but because they don't understand the language that we are using to take them through the process.
They're stupid in English.
No, so this, again, this is what you see on the corner of the internet. You can't say that. But I think it's a good point to address, actually. So we're going to leave that in. We're not going to edit that out.
Okay.
Because when you see people who are bilingual or trilingual or speak a number of languages, and particularly in professional services, and you see these TikToks where people are talking about working in a foreign country, and they say, you know, just remember, in my first language, I am funny, I am intelligent, and I am quick off the mark.
Mm-hmm.
That when you hear me speak a second language, I may sound like I'm not as intelligent. I may not understand the jokes. You might not think I'm funny. Or I might think I'm funny and you don't think I'm funny. Mm-hmm. But in my first language, I am.
Yeah.
And it's that whole recognition is that this person can speak a whole other language.
It's crazy to me, personally.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But I can't do anything. Yeah,
but no, they're not stupid in English.
No. I find it mad when it's happened a few times when like people whose English is a second language, they'll apologise to me for like, I'm sorry, it's my second language. I'm like, bro, I can't even do what you can do. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't even do that.
Yeah.
I can't do a second language.
Yeah.
Like, you're helping me.
Yeah.
Don't apologise.
Yeah.
It happens a lot as well,
and it is. It's the judgment from people who have one language to be like, well, you can't do that properly. And it's like, you might be speaking to someone who has a degree in 3 or 4 different languages.
But
might have
matter.
Multiple degrees and has worked in foreign countries, but no.
It doesn't matter if
Dave from down the road who's been in the bookies on a Thursday afternoon and, you know, sat at home unemployed for the rest of the week is going to criticise someone because they stumble over their grammar a little
just
bit.
Just poking fun at Deepak, who speaks 6 languages.
Precisely.
Crazy, yeah.
Yeah.
Very lazy and British of us.
Very lazy and, yeah, very British, not to kind of knock our own country. But, yeah, I think there needs to be an element of compassion with these sorts of things as well, that someone has learnt an entire other language. They are trying to think, process, work in that language and then get asked stupid questions like, do you dream in Spanish?
Oh my don't. I've asked everyone that. I asked someone that on Saturday. That's so embarrassing. Is that bad that you ask that?
No, but I think it's just it's such an unintelligent question. It's like, do you dream in English?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, well, what other language do words. You possibly dream in? So generally, I think where you've got people who are truly bilingual. And bearing in mind, I live with a bilingual family. Say my husband and my stepkids are Welsh. They will move very seamlessly between the two.
Mm.
But predominantly, their brains operate in Welsh. It's their first language.
Yeah, I can't get my head around that.
Yeah.
But to the mere mortals, like, it's hard to get your head around that.
And they're, I wouldn't say strange. They are strange, but not in...
Not because of their
not
language
in a negative,
thing.
Not in a negative way. But they will be speaking in Welsh. They'll hit a word that either is the same in Welsh or English, or they can't remember the Welsh word, or they stumble over it and they use an English word. And then the sentence will switch and they speak in English.
That's the trigger.
And they don't realise they've done it.
Okay, wow.
So we did some filming with the BBC, with the RNLI a few years ago, and they had to keep stopping them. They were like, you've gone into Welsh again. And I mean, at the time, the kids were only teenagers, young teenagers, and they didn't realise they were doing it. And they're having to play it back and show them, be like, look, this, here's where you change.
Just habit.
And it's just, just the way that their brains work. Because they are so very bilingual.
It's not considered a talent, I imagine, because they're used to it, but it is like quite impressive. There's a lot of money in translation nowadays.
There is. I think it's got more accessible because of, obviously, software.
Mm-hmm.
So Google Translate's got a lot better. And you see people when they go abroad now with their phones and they'll say something in English and hold the phone out to a waiter.
Yeah.
And it'll translate it.
That's
which,
cool.
It is cool, but at the same time...
Lazy?
Kind of takes a bit of the fun out of it. Like, I went skiing this year.
Mm-hmm.
went to Austria and I did German GCSE. I went on Duolingo and brushed up before we went away. And I remember speaking to someone, I'm like, oh, but everyone over there speaks English. I was like, but it's not the point.
No, no.
I want to be able to ask for my schnitzel in German and ask for another beer or whatever. And it's part of kind of immersing yourself in the country and also making an effort in a town that probably gets overwhelmed by tourism, that get really, really fed up with people by the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And there's something nice about making the effort. It's not just necessarily about how quick can you get your beer brought across to you.
No, it's the culture.
Yeah.
And engaging yourself in the culture. Yeah, the third employer's question, how can businesses make sure an employee's level of English language is up to scratch to what they need before hiring?
So this is a really good question because it kind of links on from what we were saying about translation software, but then also in the stuff that we've talked about with recruitment and onboarding. If you have got someone who has managed to get through your recruitment process and you haven't spotted that their English isn't up to scratch, you probably don't have enough human-to-human touch points in that process where actually you've either spoken to them on the phone, met them face-to-face, or at least been in an audio Teams meeting with them. Now, it's a bit of a bugbear of mine that various universities will take people's money for them to do degrees and allow them to use translation software. It means that people are coming out of university with a degree at an English or Welsh university, but don't have the capacity to speak good enough English that enables them to gain employment.
The degree is for a UK job, which they can't.
Yeah, so it almost, you know, they've spent thousands potentially on a degree that until they go and really kind of immerse themselves either in language lessons or kind of just out and about in the UK to improve their language, they're not going to be able to use. So actually, looking at someone's CV and seeing a UK-based degree isn't enough to tell you that that person can speak English.
Right.
And that's actually, it's probably a reasonable assumption to think, oh, this person's got a maths degree from, I don't know, the University of Liverpool, I don't know, to go, well, you know, they've studied maths for 3 years in this country, surely they must be able to speak English. Weirdly, it's not an assumption that you can just make anymore. I think because of the prevalence of translation software and more degrees are operating on either a remote basis. So when I went to university, I had to sit in a lecture room and take notes.
Yes,
nobody
same.
Was sat there with a laptop.
Yes, same.
My workshops, where you're in a room with either a lecturer or a professor, with only between 4 and 8 people, and you'd have to discuss case studies and argue and debate amongst yourselves. Now, it's a lot more digitally based. You don't have to necessarily attend lectures. You can just download them and listen to them afterwards. I don't know how prevalent workshops and things like that are in every university.
You're getting like kind of work experience on the job with that as opposed to this is not,
no,
not doing that.
No, exactly. So it's, there is the ability to come and pass a course in this country, get a UK-based degree and not be able to speak proper English. If then you are not interviewing somebody properly, where you're having a spontaneous conversation with someone, it's going to be very difficult to assess how well they can speak English.
I'm just wondering how many people have recruitment processes without like actual face-to-face interaction.
I think where you've got roles where you get really high turnover and you need to just make sure that people can, I don't know, use Outlook, answer the phone, type something in a Word document, that might be what they consider the minimum skills to be without actually thinking how good's the written or spoken English.
Like a caregiver type thing.
Yeah, and also an application could be very well written in beautiful, perfect, you know, grammatically correct English, which that's really ironic because that was a dreadful sentence. So you wouldn't necessarily think, but again, because of the prevalence of ChatGPT translation software, there's lots of kind of screens that people can hide behind. So I think it's really, really important that one, that we make it clear if good, strong English is required, why? And then think about how we're going to test that. I'm not suggesting that we give people an English test.
I've had to do some before, like competency tests and things like that. That's not.
And it's something, you know, we're recruiting at the moment for a legal advisor for Within Heroes because we're growing so quickly. We're asking people to do a technical legal test so that I can see where their kind of legal competency is to make sure that it fits with the level of the role that we're recruiting for. So I think something that requires spontaneous communication, which with spoken language, you're only really going to get that in an interview environment.
There's lots of good video recruit software.
Yeah.
There is on there, which I think would sort of fill the hole as well.
Potentially, provided it can pick up where AI is being used. So it's something that I really want to scope out, and it's something that we're talking to someone in our network about, is a potential pod with a guest where we talk about recruitment and AI software in recruitment. is if you are using AI recruitment software to, say, do interviews or initial sifting, is how well that it can pick up on where someone has used AI to hide the fact that their language isn't so good.
The mouth would move differently, surely.
But is the AI going to pick up on that? If you've got AI recruiting and you've got someone who's using software...
The robots.
To help with language.
Yeah, yeah.
Is robot one going to pick up that robot two is helping the person behind robot two with a language issue? Right. I don't know, because I don't know enough about this tech, but this is why I want to get a recruitment specialist on here that we can talk about the risks in the recruitment industry and this kind of thing when it comes to sifting.
Interesting, because video recruit was seen as like a real problem solver years ago.
But it's a real boom at the moment. There's a lot of people using it.
Mm.
Whether it's effective or not, again, we're going to save that for another pod. But yeah, it's thinking about what is your recruitment process? How are you going to test the level that you need someone to be able to have competency over the English language? So for some roles, as we've said, you might not be bothered if they can't speak much English because actually the role doesn't demand it. If it's very, very technical. However, if it's something that's customer facing that requires someone to be able to have a really, really good command of the language, to be able to understand nuance, to be able to understand sarcasm, innuendo, to be able to respond quickly if someone is angry, upset or whatever, then an interview situation is probably going to be at the moment the only way that you're going to be able to solve that without giving someone a formal English test.
Oh, God forbid we interview real life people, eh?
Shocker.
Employee perspective now, we'll blast through these. This loops back to the first question, you'll be happy to hear. If fluency in English wasn't listed as a requirement in the job adverts, is it fair for my employer to now expect it from me?
So again, you know, I think it's a fair question to ask if we haven't listed it as an expected requirement. And then you'll probably get some people say, well, if you're applying for a job in the UK, then surely you should expect that English is a requirement. And I would say probably not, depending on the role. Equally, I would say you as a candidate, when you read the job description, you should be able to assess whether or not you believe a fundamental grasp of the English language is likely to be reasonably required. So I would say there may be an element of naivety, but also it's a hard old world out there. Sometimes if people can get a job, they'll take what they can get and hope that...
Especially now.
You know, how many times in your life, not necessarily at work, but have you done something on the fly and thought, you know, I'll work it out afterwards?
Yeah, no comment.
You know, I'd say it's probably something that everyone can hold their hands up to at some point.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And particularly in a work environment, it's not just English. People will sometimes overstate their skills and abilities and go, well, it's a tomorrow problem.
It catches up with them.
Yeah.
And when you apply for vacancies, or if you were to apply for vacancies in other countries like Europe or... They always stress, like, in like a German country, you must be fluent in German.
Yeah.
It's only in the UK that we're a bit, like, sparse with it.
Yeah.
Why?
And I think, again, it's the arrogance that we expect everybody in the world to speak
English.
Yeah,
don't we?
Yeah.
Everyone should.
You look at the job description, you establish whether or not you think it would be reasonably required. Can you be dismissed for it, even if it wasn't in the job description? Yes. As we've touched on before, if it's that you can speak English, but it's not of a standard that's good enough, it could be a capability point. So where I see this... fairly regularly, actually, is where you've got someone who's in, say, a support role in professional services. So for lawyers, accountants, architects, you know, where people are paying a premium for these services, they expect to be dealt with very professionally. And then if they get an email from someone where there is, you know, it's littered with errors, or they're rude, or actually the grasp of language just makes someone feel like, what am I paying for here? That can be a capability point, and it's fair to dismiss. If it's that actually they've just got such a little grasp of the language that it renders the situation impossible, then yes, it would be a fair dismissal. The risk that you've got where you've got someone who it is English second language, they can speak English, but we're saying it's not of the standard, but actually they can understand people, they can be understood, but we just think maybe the accent is a bit thick, or they're hard to understand, or that you feel culturally they're not fitting because they're not understanding the jokes, they're not getting the sarcasm, then we're starting to get into the realms of, is there discrimination here?
Is it? That was my next question.
Because if we are talking about, you know, someone who actually has got a master of the language, but we're sort of blaming that then rather than calling out and being honest and saying we think it's cultural fit, or that actually because you don't understand people's jokes, I think then we are getting into the realms of where there could potentially be a discrimination risk.
Racial discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
Given that I was hired with a limited level of English, what are my rights and what responsibilities do I have?
So if you've been hired, you've got a limited level of English, it could be that you could school yourself up, enroll in a language school, or be honest with your employer and say, look, actually, I feel like I might have jumped in the deep end here a little bit. That's me doing it again, jumped in the deep end.
For metaphors,
like, what are you talking about? but I'm committed to improving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having that open conversation can probably make all the difference, particularly then if the employer might be able to recommend courses that you can go on, look at maybe helping you at work so that you are a bit more immersed in the language. I think hiding it or not showing a willingness to learn is always more likely to mean that you're more likely to lose your employment over it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, accountability in general is a good thing, isn't it? If mm-hmm. you go into the workplace and say, my English ain't great, but it's going to get better, it can only stand you in good stead moving forward, can't it? Mm-hmm. Final question from an employee perspective. This links to this discrimination, mm-hmm. but if I'm being treated unfairly because of my language skills, could this be a claim for racial discrimination?
Potentially,
let's
yes.
Let's talk money.
Yeah, potentially, yes. And as we know, discrimination, it can be uncapped in terms of the damages.
Oh,
so
heck.
This isn't something that we can just brush off.
Mm-hmm.
But as I've said, if we've got someone who does have a command of the language, but it's that their accent is perhaps being picked up by colleagues, or people are making fun out of them, or making certain assumptions of them because of accent, or overly criticizing the way that they speak when they don't need to. So people who are native English speakers make a mess of their grammar.
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
Yes, we do.
But you wouldn't necessarily pick them up over it. To overly micromanage the way somebody speaks or the things that they are saying mm-hmm. when it's a second language, that could be different treatment that can affect somebody's dignity. So you could potentially in those situations face a discrimination claim.
Like, I've done that before.
Which
it was my friend.
It was your friend.
It's fine.
But it brings us back to, you know, it's a training point. Some people might think it's lighthearted fun. And when we've talked about sexual harassment in the past and banter and how that can get out of control and that employers didn't realise they could be liable for these claims, it's why we're next. The next thing that we're focusing on with the e-learning is the DE&I training. So diversity, equity and inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, sexual harassment, we're getting there. We're training people on this. We've put, you know, thousands of people now through this training. And people are starting to understand it within the context of sexual harassment. But actually, there's so many things that an employer can be liable for under the Equality Act and in respect of discrimination claims. And it comes back to employee behaviour. And if we're not managing people and helping people to understand what is and what isn't acceptable, then we're going to be on the hook for claims. So where you've got somebody who, because they hear a certain accent, it's like, oh, have you got curry for lunch again? No, it's not okay. It's not okay. And that's where the training comes in. That again, it's not banter. It's not just harmless jokes. That we can't be behaving in a way because of where somebody's from or where we think they're from because of their accent, and then thinking that that banter's all right.
No, it's not okay. Don't do it. Lessons learned. You touched on it a bit there.
Mm-hmm.
But what emergency measures can HR departments take to prevent this happening in the future? DEI training?
DEI training for when someone's in the workplace.
Okay.
But then let's have a look at recruitment and onboarding. How are we bringing our candidates in? How are we vetting them? What are the actual requirements of the role that we've got? And is that really clear in our job descriptions?
Mm-hmm.
Are we working with a trusted recruitment partner that we can have these open conversations with about what the requirements for a role are and think about how we're doing that sifting? Because really, if we get someone into the workplace who can't speak English and it comes as a surprise, we've failed.
Yes.
No one else is responsible in that situation. We have failed.
I think even a recruitment process that doesn't actually, you don't speak to the person's face
mm-hmm.
and see the mouth move, to me is wild.
Yeah.
I've never had a purely technical recruitment process.
But I think they're out there.
Yeah. I think it's getting more normalised now, but like how like unpersonal, unwanted must that person
feel?
But
I think it's that, you know, the remote working stuff and the whole post-COVID world is... there's still a huge thing around, one, people wanting to work remotely, but two, people who don't like camera on. You know, working day to day and the camera off stuff, it's, you know, so I think if you're in a recruitment process and someone said, look, I just don't feel comfortable having camera on if we're having a Teams interview.
Do you know
I don't
that?
Think every manager would push back on that. I would.
I would call that woke nonsense.
Okay. That's an argument that we'll pick for a different day. But,
could be here all day.
You know, some recruitment managers... would, if they were taken kind of a bit on the hop with that, would probably would agree.
What, like it's okay to not have your camera on?
Potentially, yeah.
Nah.
Yeah.
I'm
but then how do you know it's even the person that you think you're interviewing? It could be somebody else.
Oh, a GDPR issue.
Yeah. How do you know that you are, you know, that again, that they're not using things like translation software or reading off something, you know, or that they've got a help there. So it's so, so important that we think about, okay, yes, what reasonable adjustments can we put in place for people who've got potentially disabilities that we can level that playing field? But are we actually vetting people well enough when it comes to ability to do the job?
Sorry, your recruitment process is out.
Yeah.
Would be what I'd say.
Yeah.
I'm like...
Rarely are you this shocked.
I'm not far off Gen Z. Not a million miles away, am I? But that is...
It's a red flag.
That's awful.
Yeah.
I would...
But you've got to remember, when you've got jobs where, particularly where you've got huge workforces and there's high turnover and high churn, and actually the personality of the individual doesn't really matter if it's very kind of process driven.
I'll send them in.
Sometimes, yeah, it's a bum on a seat or it's someone on a production line.
Send them in. Factory stuff, like, yeah, I understand it, but I don't know.
Well, look at one of our previous pods. Who was it? Where they managed to recruit a murderer.
Oh, yeah, the window...
You know, this stuff happens.
The window fitting people. Yeah. Was it? And he went out at night, came back, and it was with an office full of women, and he bought the keys back, and they didn't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy. Sort your recruitment processes out.
Yeah.
That's my message. What's yours? What's your final message for the pod?
My final message. D&I training.
Our D&I training.
Yeah, our D&I training.
Thanks for your input and your knowledge as ever. I've learned a thing or two. Yeah, like, comment, subscribe, everyone. Hopefully you enjoyed this one. Cheers. Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect. But by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.